This is the Trinity College of Florida podcast. I'm John Keller. Well, today I have with me a colleague, a professor, a faculty member, a brother in the Lord, someone I highly admire, someone who has diligently gone way beyond where it says study to show thyself approved. He's gone way above the duty of that, and we're going to find that out today because I have with me my good friend, Dr. Thomas Woodward.
Yeah, you can call me Tom.
All right, you got it.
Tom. Well, prof, I tell my students, hey, just take the word professor, cut off the last two syllables.
Prof.
You got prof, so you can call me prof.
Well, you know, there's a difference between a prophet, professor and a teacher. Uh-huh. See, a teacher teaches, but a professor professes.
Oh, I better be.
He professes truth, hopefully.
I better be faithful to that calling.
So my daughter posted something the other day and said, wherever your students are under a teacher, that teacher is discipling them. Mm. So if you're under a secular professor who's an agnostic or an atheist, has that worldview, they're discipling your child.
Wow.
And that,
profound, that says a lot.
That says a lot. It was a meme on Facebook. So there you go. Well, I can see here that you are the research professor of Trinity College of Florida. You've been doing that for years. Mm-hmm. You're the president and founder of the C.S. Lewis Society. Mm-hmm.
Which we revived after going into slumber at Princeton University, and they gave us permission to revive it and to bring it to Trinity College. So I kind of refounded it.
You refounded it. Yeah. You brought it back to life. I like that. I love that. But you are an author. You wrote Doubts About Darwin and History of Intelligent Design, its sequel, Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design.
Woo-hoo.
You co-authored with Dr. James Gills of The Mysterious Epigenome.
Perfectly pronounced.
What Lies Beyond DNA.
Uh-huh.
By the way, that's the book I read, just so you know.
Okay.
You're a graduate of Princeton University in the History Department. You received a THM in Systematic Theology from Dallas Seminary. And if that's not enough, you have your PhD in Communication from the University of South Florida with a research focus on the rhetoric of science. So, as a senior research professor at Trinity College, you've been teaching here since the 80s.
Yeah, 1988. I hate to say it. 1988 is when I was hired, and that was fun because they said, you can teach theology alongside the World Missions. I was the chair of the World Missions Department at that point. But we've had far too much fun for the last 30 years.
Yeah, theology, apologetics, missions, refounding C.S. Lewis Society, and really speaking the truth of Christianity at lectures and conferences and debates on college campuses, at Princeton and Dartmouth and Cambridge and Georgetown, 75 other universities. And then you even had a weekly apologetic radio program called The Universe Next Door. And you have, of course, been a big proponent of the design movement.
Intelligent design.
And you're well connected. I've sat in one of your classes and teaching that course.
I've been able to hang out with some of the greats. Steve Meyer, good friend of mine, is the most famous author. And we've had him here at Trinity, I think, 5 times now. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I was kind of surprised when I looked up on the computer screen and live online speaking with you is Steve Meyer and Jonathan Wells.
Yeah, Jonathan Wells was right next there. And we've had Michael Behe.
Michael Behe started the whole thing for me.
Well, yeah, his outstanding book, Darwin's Black Box, was the breakthrough. I mean, even the New York Times took note of it and said nice things about it. That's a shock.
It's always interesting when you bring up intelligent design with people that are not, it seems like non-believers have more information about intelligent design than believers do sometimes because they don't really realize, you know, if you're denying the existence of the Creator, that's fundamentally a problem in Romans chapter 1 because you're suppressing the truth in your unrighteousness and God gives you over to as a wrath to a reprobate mind. And we can see the world today, just look around us on the news and what's going on in our neighborhoods and families and how much everything has deteriorated today. We can see the suppression of the truth, the unrighteousness of man, because they simply won't even acknowledge the Creator. And they can look at the creation. I'm summarizing intelligent design. See if I did good. We can look at the creation. We can see that the Creator exists by that which is made. We can look at DNA and say, that's information. You know, the Big Bang gives you, the Big Bang, you know, they say it's mass and energy. Well, where did the information come from, guys? And how did it come full, perfectly sequenced for every living thing in the universe? Mm-hmm. And then how does the DNA of a squirrel know that the DNA of a tree is going to produce a nut for it to eat? Like, how do they work together at the same time? You know, I mean, it's so silly not to believe in the Creator. But you are, that's who you are. That's been your passion. I love it too, by the way, as you can tell. So we know that you've done a lot of research and you put a lot of work together. What happens when you're a Trinity College student and you walk in a Woodward class?
Well, I mean, it depends on what class. If you're going into my C.S. Lewis class, which we just finished up, we do that every other year. We actually may start doing it every year. But C.S. Lewis, Apostle to the Skeptic, is like a structured crash course on who Lewis was, or Jack, as people called him. Tolkien, right. His best friend, J.R.R. Tolkien, actually was involved in heavily in leading him to faith after a 20-year passage of time in the tunnel of atheism. But we not only teach Lewis's life, but we have students read the book Mere Christianity and the book Problem of Pain and the book Miracles and even the sci-fi novel, science fiction novel, sure. Paralandra. It's just, and one student said that book blew his mind. It was his favorite book the whole semester. Well, that blew my mind and made me very happy that we had put it in the curriculum. Well, but we want students who come at into any of these courses that we teach in the area of apologetics, we don't want them just to learn facts. We do require them to learn some key truths and some key
lines. Yeah, there are tests.
There are tests. We do have quizzes and tests. And all the students did very well in the final exam, I will just say with a bit of pride. But what we do is we try to explain how this just brings a roar, an Aslan roar, in the very heart and soul of every Christian so that they're excited about their faith. I mean, this isn't just true. It's not like really positively true. It's overwhelmingly true. It's like a tsunami of evidence is crisscrossing planet Earth and at a greater and greater height each year. And so what we see in the writings and the beautiful theological constructs and tools given to us by C.S. Lewis, we see the same thing happening in science. Can I hop over to my science
teaching? Absolutely.
So in the process of teaching our course on Darwinism and intelligent design, we don't want students to know less about Darwinism. We want them to know more about Darwinism than the Darwinists typically know.
Right.
So that they can think circles around Darwinism, know its strong points, and there are a couple on a minor, like micro-evolving. Yeah, animals can micro-evolve. They don't change their fundamental shape or structure. They don't change what type of animal or plant they are, but they can actually break things. They can break DNA, and that sends them into a little kind of a, let's say, a blind alley, a cul-de-sac, where they just exist in this one special environment. But they're not adding DNA. They're losing DNA. They're blunting or breaking DNA. And this is a new massive truth discovered and brought out by Michael Behe himself in his recent book, Darwin Duval. So that's just an example of one of the interesting facts about Darwinian theory so that students can be accurate and respectful. We don't want them to go out and just say, oh, you guys are a bunch of dummies. No, some of these people who've studied Darwinism have only heard one side of it. So we just say, hey, you know, in a cross-examination and a public trial, you hear the other side. And so we try to bring, this is what the Darwinists are going to tell you. This is where there's a bit of truth, a grain of truth, and this is where there are huge, massive gaps that cut the feet out, the legs out from their theory. Then we show them the case for design and how many people on the other side of the equation, that is the other side of this debate, atheists and agnostics, many of them are our best friends. Why? They have admitted that Darwinian theory is in a state of decline, erosion, collapse. They've admitted that the case that Behe and Dembski and Meyer and Wells and all these other great scholars have made are really compelling. And so it's great to have those words coming out of the mouth of an atheist. And so it's like almost Gamaliel in chapter 5 of the book of Acts, where you have a guy who's like a member of the Sanhedrin, a great theologian. He's admitting that these guys actually might be right. You better be careful with them. And so today we have Gamaliels everywhere. God has raised up people in other camps that are even not Christians who are saying powerfully supportive things about the Judeo-Christian truth claims. And it's just an exciting time to be alive. And we're praying that that will just ignite a fire or increase the fire in the soul of the students who come here, as well as enable them to share with lost people who really need Jesus.
Well, there's a you know, the great apologetic verse in Peter says, you know, let's give the, be ready to give a reason.
Exactly.
To anyone.
Exactly.
Of why you have the hope that you have.
I'm summarizing. With gentleness and respect.
Absolutely. That's something that we could really maybe we should teach a class on that. Oh, we do. It's the whole Bible. But, you know, man's made in the image of God.
Which, by the way, is our specialty here at Trinity College in Florida.
Absolutely. But, you know, I look at what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I look at what you're saying. I know from my own conversations with people that, you know, some will say, oh, I'm an atheist. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, have you searched for God? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, yeah, I have. I go, oh, wait a minute. So the 80 trillion light years of space across the known universe, you've checked every inch of that. Mm-hmm. So what percentage of that have you checked? And they'll be like, 1%? 1/1,000,000%? Like, when we start, I go, sounds like you haven't looked at all. And but I've had many conversations with people. I had a Bible study years ago using Darwin's Black Box. It was the first book out, and I cannot tell you how many people. God, I feel so humbled by this, that I had a Bible study that people came to a bookstore, and we discussed these books.
Wow!
And it always turned into a Bible study. And when Billy Graham crusade was in 1998 here, the whole crew walk out on the field except Christ. And some came to this college. So it's just an amazing thing to know that's a starting place to have a conversation with people. Mm-hmm. But I love the content. I love what you teach. And, you know, my own child had you as a professor, and she liked you. So if my daughter,
she doesn't
like
anybody.
She doesn't like anybody. So if she likes you, she likes everybody. But no, but she's very biased about what is.
That's funny.
Is real. Anyway, the couple things to ask you today, we don't want to take a lot of time, is a lot of information about you on there. I mean, I think you're the only professor that has a Wikipedia page at our college.
And that's been fixed. They said some little bit inaccurate and not quite nasty, but just not helpful and inaccurate things. And we called them to a task, and so they, they fixed it.
Yeah, it's interesting how those things kind of happen. Anybody attached to intelligent design scares the world, because, again, we're back to how dare you take away my ability to suppress the truth. And whatever you're presenting.
So many people are just wallowing in ignorance in that one area. The Darwinian theory is just propped up by just so many toothpicks.
Yeah, years ago I printed out a list, and it was the descent of Darwinism. It was all the PhDs around the world. Mm-hmm. And they all were on this. They all signed this document. It said, "You know, we don't agree. We don't believe that Darwin evolution is a legitimate
explanation
for the origin of the universe. Yeah. We just don't think it's even logical." And when you have PhDs from the entire world signing that, and it wasn't maybe a percentage of them were Christians, but they were not people necessarily of faith. These are people of science, and they signed this document, and I printed it out, and it was 30 pages long. And I just taped all the pages together when I spoke on evolution versus Darwinism a long time ago. And I just popped this little piece of paper out when someone said, well, you know, very few of you believe in intelligent design. Well, oh, really? And I just pulled that thing out, man, and rolled it in the paper. And it was a good laugh for everyone. Mm-hmm. But then it was very interesting to watch people going up and looking at all the names from all the universities of the entire world. But what a great thing that you get to do. You get to do this job. You get to do this mission in life. What are you currently working at? What's your current...
Other than completing the semester, which we're almost done, I was able to teach...
Well, what did you teach this semester?
Well, I taught a theology of sanctification, one of my favorite courses to teach. I've taught it, I think, 4 or 5 times. It's really based on a book by Ken Boa, who himself is a Bible scholar and apologist, lives up in the Atlanta area. But Ken Boa's book, Conformed to His Image, is spectacular. It's beyond. It's like 5 degrees beyond.
Now, is he the same guy that wrote Wilkerson Boa's book, co-authored?
Yeah, well, he's co-authored tons of books. I think he has 25, 30 books to his name.
As I talk to the Bible?
Well, he's done apologetics books. He's done Old Testament survey books. Yeah, Ken Boa is a polymath. He teaches and he's expert. But let me just explain what I've been working on this semester. Ken Boa's book was the foundation, but it wasn't the only thing. I mean, we used scripture heavily. We did theology analysis of how God says we are progressively each day more and more conformed to the image of his son. That's the goal.
And what's the name of that book again?
Ken Boa's Conformed to His Image. Conformed to His Image. I had by I think every member of my class came up to me privately one time or another and said, hey, Prof, this is the best book I've ever read.
I'm going to order it today.
So, but that was the Theology of Sanctification. We had a blast. It was so much fun. I think it should be required a course here, but at least we're going to offer it every other year, probably from now to the end of time to the rapture. So,
yes.
So, but what we have also been working on is that we're trying to do some ethics and theology teaching coming up next semester. I'll be teaching in Cedars, those that are actually there in front of me, the issues in theology and ethics, and I love teaching that. But I'm also teaching a course on apologetics, and hoping to complete two books this next 6 months.
Wow!
Yeah, so one of them is actually an overview of the whole Old Testament, focusing on the explosions of apologetic evidence all through that timeline.
Now, I don't think anyone's done that.
It's pretty uncharted territory. So we're having far too much fun with that.
That is fantastic.
And so I'm working on a book which really takes C.S. Lewis's Lord, Liar, Lunatic argument, what's called the Trilemma. You know, Christ can't be just a good teacher, because if he got it messed up at the core of who he was, claiming to be God, then he has to be like loony, or he has to be an outright liar. And then legend is another option people throw out. And then Lewis just knocks that down because, hey, the Gospels don't fit any of the parameters, any of the defining traits of legend literature, none of them. So how can you categorize it that way when it doesn't, you know, none of the box gets checked? So what we are trying to do in that book is basically explain how Lewis's argument is now stronger than ever. And we go through seven categories of Jesus's claims and just say, are you really aware of how powerful this is? How shocking it is? And we're doing a reboot. I've just gotten a contract to redo the epigenetics book. And I think we're just going to change the name. Like, what's an epigenome? Well, we're going to call it DNA and Beyond. So they're going to talk about DNA and then the world of tagging and flagging and
sure.
and those little special bits of information that sit above the DNA that rest on it, like you put a blob of fudge on your chip vanilla ice cream. Okay. So, but in the fall, we're also teaching Life and Revelation of Christ, which is an overview of the four Gospels. I love
Fantastic.
That your daughter had that.
She learned so much in
that
class.
Well, it was fun to have her in the class. And then we're teaching another course that is really kind of cool, and that's the Pastoral Epistles, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus. Woohoo! I'm excited. So we'll
those
be teaching
are great.
That
those
fall.
Are those are some amazing. I never took that course. I was slated to take that course when I was in Moody, and I never got that course. The Pauline Epistles, I never got that.
Well, you can audit it.
So I get it for free because I work here.
There you
so
go.
I'll come
there
take
go.
One.
Come
there
on
we
out.
Go.
That's great.
Well, so what you're telling me is you're not busy at all.
I'm not busy. I'm just twiddling my thumbs.
Now, we know that you are C.S. Lewis. This year you had a banquet, finally, you know, because of COVID.
Finally.
Because of COVID.
Yeah.
But we had a banquet this year.
And you were there.
Yeah. And who was your special guest speaker?
Eric Metaxas.
That was that guy is something.
The guy is incredible. You talk about a guy who doubles as a stand-up comic, better than Jay Leno. And then people say, "Who's Jay Leno?" Okay,
right, yeah,
you know,
anybody,
fill in the blank. Any comedian,
yeah, sure.
You want to name Eric Metaxas beats him hands down. He is. I mean, our crowd just erupted with laughter every 45 seconds or less, and yet he's slipping in this powerful information. From his new book, Is Atheism Dead? You talk about a provocative title.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And so he was bringing out just a few of these massive and really kind of like compelling. They're like a smart bomb, like a laser-guided missile slipping through the back door.
I haven't read the book yet, and I need to.
Yeah, I've been enjoying just getting into it.
I'm sure it's on Audible.
It is. Yeah.
I do Audible a lot because I like to hike.
Well, his Socrates in the sand. Now, he went to Yale. Now, for me as a Princeton graduate, I won't hold that against him.
Sure.
But he actually said, you know, at Yale they teach nonsense, and I'm afraid that Princeton is moving in that direction. I hope I don't upset anybody who's attending with me my 50th reunion here in the next 2 weeks. But we're just able to see God's hand working at all levels in the universities, even professors of some foreign countries. Gunter Beckley, the famed paleontologist of dragonflies. He has come to faith, and they booted him out of his museum, even though he was very quiet about it. He's hardly said, we understand you do not subscribe to Darwinian theory. He says, no, I can't square it with the evidence any longer. Well, there's the door. I mean, talk about subtle.
So yeah, there is like that going on.
It's like
today.
A Gestapo. It's just crazy.
Well, it's what it is, actually. Yeah. You know, it really is. It's nothing new under the sun. Well, we know that you are, you've been here for a while, and we know that you have had so many students come through here that you have been their professor. You inspired them.
Well, they've inspired me. That's the great thing about,
awesome.
The youth of the upper teens and the lower 20s. And we've had some who were in their 40s, 50s. I've had some people in their 80s when they finished. It took them a while. but we've just had a ton of fun because being a professor at Trinity College, for me, is like a dream come true. I was a missionary in the Dominican Republic. Did 2 years of teaching the Word of God in churches and outreach events at universities. I actually developed a talk. Can I give the Spanish name of the talk? Los fósiles que dan vergüenza a Charles Darwin. Okay, the fossils that embarrass Charles Darwin.
So good.
And that title was a grabby title, but when I went from university to university in Santo Domingo, I kept thinking, and my wife and my daughter were going through some special challenges, physical challenges, health issues. And I kept thinking, well, maybe someday I can share this in other places besides Santo Domingo. Well, the Lord's opened up the door to go to 36 countries and share this message. But have this base at Trinity College has been far too much fun.
That's absolutely great. We also know, let's back up even a little farther back than that, we also know you are a veteran. Military veteran. We don't talk about that much.
Okay, U.S. Air Force. Woohoo!
Yes, and you
photo intelligence, or they called it imagery intelligence by that point.
Okay, and what years were you? And what was going on in the world during that period?
Well, it was Vietnam. Okay, so Nixon reinstituted the lottery, the draft system by lottery, and that was like I think spring of '70, if I remember. And so when I found out that my number was 32, okay, my birth date. And I said, okay, I don't think I want to just be drafted in the Army. I think I'll serve as an Air Force officer. So I went down, applied for ROTC the next morning, and they accepted me, and I completed it. And then the rest is history. November of 72, I graduated in that May, but November 72, I entered active service, trained for 6 months out at a base that doesn't exist anymore on the east side of Denver, a place called Lowry Air Force Base.
Yep.
And then I then shipped over to South Carolina. Near Columbia is a town called Sumter, and that's where Shaw Air Force Base is. So I was at Shaw for about 2 years in the 18th TAC Recon Squadron, the 33rd TAC Recon Squadron, the 18th TAC Recon Squadron, and so we had a blast, and it was great. I wound up falling in love with a young gal who lived in that area, and we were married in Sumter, and the rest is history.
That's great. So I thank you for your service, by the way.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share with anybody listening. I mean, Trinity College is an amazing college. I'll just say this, when I was out at San Jose State about 4 years ago training some of the Campus Crusade people in the apologetics of the resurrection, they're going to do an outreach at Easter. And they had introduced me as teaching at Trinity College, this place in Florida. I said, well, you probably know who Billy Graham is. And I raised my hand. How many people? And I thought everybody raised their hand. No one raised their hand.
Yeah.
And I said, and when moment of desperation, I said, well, maybe you've heard of KB, the Christian, rap and hip-hop artist. And every hand goes off.
That's too funny.
Change of time.
Yeah, I know that, the stands of time.
Yeah.
Move on, right? And that's
I will say this. KB was just one of the best students I've ever had. I mean, his chart that he did for my study of in hermeneutics of 1 Thessalonians, it looked like a wiring diagram for a state-of-the-art IBM computer switchboard.
He does. I follow him on social media. He does the work.
He does the work, yeah.
And that's the thing that I think really is something we can say about our students, that we've had many students come through here over the years who have done some amazing things.
And, he said, my love for the Lord and my knowledge of the Bible tripled when I was at Trinity College. And that's our goal. But I just thought that struck me. So thank you for what you're doing here.
I appreciate that. I do. It's my pleasure. Well, I'm not going to keep you too long because we want to go eat lunch. But I do, I like to ask this question sometimes. And I think it's a question that I think is worth asking. How is it that Tom came to faith in Christ? What was that like?
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, just a nutshell version of it. I had slid away from my status as a believer. I believe in God as a young kid. But by the time I was in junior high and high school, that belief was ebbing away because I was into science. I mean, I wanted to be a medical doctor. I was into the Mercury, Gemini, Apollo space programs. And I was hanging on every word of every scientist I ever heard. And I thought, Christianity doesn't make sense. All these miracles, they don't happen. That was just legends. And so I announced basically quietly to my parents that I wouldn't be going to church when I went to college any longer. And they said, okay, well, don't worry about it. Maybe you'll come back. And so, but I heard that people on the Princeton campus were presenting the case for creation. I thought, that's obnoxious. That's really inappropriate. And I said, I need to meet these people. I mean, who are they? What is this Christian group? I mean, okay, if you want to be a Christian, fine, but don't knock evolution. I mean, I'm an evangelist for evolution at this point. So I meet the leader, and to make a long story short, he, after the lecture that he had invited a pastor to come on campus, he said, the first question after I said, do you reject evolution? He said, well, do you know that you and I are sinners before a righteous and holy God? I mean, he didn't waste any time getting around to the key issue. I said, well, I've heard about that. He says, do you know what the wages of sin is? It's death, spiritual separation from God. I said, oh. And then he said, but Christ loves us so completely and infinitely. He bridged the gap so we wouldn't have to be separated. Can I share about what he did with you over, let's say, a cup of coffee? So we went back to his apartment, and I was hitting him with every bit of Darwinian, fisticuffs punch. And he was coming back with Isaiah 53 and verses from Romans and John. And I thought, this is a stalemate. The next day I came back, we complete our conversation, but I just prayed a bogus prayer, didn't mean it.
Right.
And so then he said, he said, well, I'll follow you up. Well, he tried to follow me up. I said, I really don't want to see you anymore. And that was kind of like the end of it, I thought. But then angst, the worry about what happens when you die, was hitting
sure.
me like a wave. And so I began study of the Bible with a younger guy from the same group. He came to my room there at Witherspoon Hall every week for about 10 weeks. By the end of the semester, he invited me to his apartment, and that's where it all came together. I realized Christ had died for my sins. I was a sinner, and yet he had risen from the dead, and I could come to him and receive this free gift of eternal life. So I had said to my friend Bill Fay, I said, do I have to do this here in front of you? He said, no, you can do it privately in your dorm room, but let me know if you make that decision. I said, well, I'm going to do it sooner or later. Might as well get it over with now. And so in May of 69 is when I received Christ at the end of my freshman year.
Wow. That's not too popular in 1969.
Not that much. Although the Jesus movement really took off in 70.
Okay.
So the number of students in our group was maybe 10 or 12, then it became 20, then it became 30. By the time I graduated, there were 40 students in our group. It quadrupled.
That's quite a story. I love to ask that question sometimes because that's an amazing story. Someone might identify themselves in that story, quite honestly. I love that Jesus said, you'll be my witnesses. And we can't, this is the thing the world doesn't have that opposes Christ. They don't have the witness. We have the witness of, we know what Christ has done for us. We know the traumas and terrors and heartaches we've had in our lives, we all experience, but nobody can touch the peace that we have.
Amen.
And I invite people all the time to, I say, for me personally, when there's a tragedy and people are going through it collectively, I'll say, I don't know about you guys, but if I didn't have my faith in Christ, I could not do this. I could not be, I would need a drug. I would need something. People turn to the bottle, they turn to many different things. But I go, I know that, my entire family's in heaven. I know that. And I know it logically, coherently. I know the evidence of the Bible. I know the evidence of Christ. I know what he did to change me. And that's bring me from death to life. That's where really, when I say I'm a witness of Christ, it's because he changed me. He changed my heart. I'm continually being changed. I need to take your class on sanctification. But it really is a tremendous thing. Well, thank you so much today.
Thank you. This is fun.
We should do this again. This is fun. Yeah. But I do want to say, what's the website, C.S. Lewis Society? What's
their website? Apologetics.org.
Apologetics.org.
Well, then someone said, how did you get that web name? did you pay somebody $100,000 to buy that? No, we just grabbed it. Because that morning, we had apologetics.com was available. I told my guy, my helper, grab.com. He said, someone just grabbed it. I said, quick, grab.org. He grabbed it. He said, we got it.
That is a blessing. Yeah. Because that really 1994.
Is. 1994.
Yeah, I will tell you that is, as a web person, that is a great domain name.
Yeah.
And I'll put the link on your page so people want to see it.
Well, God bless you. Thanks for all you do, John Keller.
This has been the Trinity College Podcast with Dr. Thomas Woodward. I'm John Keller.